All right. So welcome back, everyone. I actually wanted to make a quick comment before we get started. Romy had asked me about just some things to keep in mind when we do a sugya, like what are some important ideas to be looking out for. And I just jotted down five separate things that I think would be helpful. Romy, this is an answer to our discussion last semester. So I think you want to keep your eyes open for, number one, at the most basic level, the core concept or the core principle at issue in the sugya. It's like, what's the main issue? What's the main concept at work? So for example, in our sugya, what's the main concept? Ned, what's the main concept in the sugya?
Public goods.
No, in the narrow sugya.
No. Who pays for public goods?
Yeah, well, even more narrowly, the exemption of the Rabbanan from taxes, right? So that's a clear legal concept or a legal principle, right? Yeah, everybody agree? So you want to just like be able to capture what that is. That's at the most elementary level, maybe at the point of being even trivial. But I think in each sugya, you want to just have like a clear idea of what that is. Like in earlier sugyas, you know, we spoke about kamdina, right, versus hadardina. Like to what extent is a past legal decision binding on future ones, or like privacy and hezekriya, right? So privacy is the main issue. So that's very trivial, but that's, you know, it's sometimes easy to lose sight of that when you get all mired in the details. The second thing that you should keep your eyes open for is different conceptualizations of the main concept and main principle in the sugya. So for example, in our sugya, you have a main concept like Rabban Lavoy Nitirusa, Lo Tzrichi Nitirusa, but there are different ways of conceptualizing that principle. Right? Sometimes philosophers distinguish between a concept and a conceptualization. So here the concept is that the Rabbanan are exempt from taxes, but there are different ways of conceptualizing that. Right? So for example, in our sugya itself, we'll see one way of conceptualizing it seems to be that the Rabbanan don't require shmira. A different way of conceptualizing it is that they're not the cause of the harm that is brought upon society, right? Another way of conceptualizing it is that this has to do with people who are osik b'malacha shemayim just shouldn't have to bear in public burdens. Does everybody see that? So there's a concept, but there are multiple conceptualizations of it. So you want to bear in mind, you want to always look out for what are those different conceptualizations. I would say those are the two most basic things to look out for. Number three is just more practical. You want to bear in mind the scope and the application of the principle or concept at work. So in this case, for example, what's an issue of scope or application? Who would be considered Rabbanan or Talmud Chacham for the purposes of being exempt from taxes? Right? Does this apply to all types of taxes or only to a subset of taxes? Right? That's like an issue of scope and application, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense to you guys? Benji, you have a question on this?
Yeah. Is number three just like the nafkamina of number two?
No, not necessarily. Issues of number three may flow from issues of number two. But I think it's cleaner to think of them as separate issues to be on the lookout for. Right, so for example, like you may be an anti-brisker, you might be an anti-conceptualist. Like you might be like a pure, to take Ariel's phrase, black letter law person. Right, you just want to know like the doctrine, right, not the theory or anything. But you still might think it's important, like Lasuyesh Maisa Libidhochas, just to know the scope and the application of it. Right, so it's cleaner to think of three as just a separate issue, not dependent upon two in any way. Although maybe its parameters will be determined by two. Yeah? Okay. Number four, I think number four, you want to walk out of a sugya aware of the source and exegetical bases or exegetical issues of the sugya. So, for example, like where does this legal concept fall out from? Right? Is there some pasuk involved or... What are the main Gemaras that introduce or discuss this issue, right? So I think as like a separate level of your own learning of sugya, you want to really have a clear sense of like what are the main sources, exegetically speaking, for the concepts at work. So, for example, in this sugya, you have very nice discussion, Baba Basra, Daf Ches, right? And you have all these random sukkim that are pulled into the discussion. Some from Nevi'im, some from Ksuvim, right? Yeah? You want to have a sense of what are other Gemaras that are relevant to this discussion. Anybody know in this sugya what's like a maybe a Gemara that's not immediately relevant? And but I'll give you one. Like, yeah, Ned? Maybe, yeah, if like the Chassam Sofer point. Yeah, but also the Gemara in Brachos that Rabbi Yonah points to, that maybe Rabbanan don't need to say Kriya Shema Lamita. Right? So you just want to have a... I think it's important for your own analysis just to have a clear sense in your mind about what the different sources, both Psukim-wise and Gemara-wise, that stand at the center of the discussion. That's totally not conceptual. You see that? It's not a conceptual issue. But it's just like knowing... the roots, like the source roots of the discussion. Yeah, good. And then, Ariel.
Is there a reason why four comes after the scope? Just like, I know in the past, like, you know, the places that do like Makoro Vihakif, and they start with the source.
Yeah, I don't mean for this to be like a Mukdam Mu'uchar Batorah, right? It's like, I think these are just things to keep in mind. Which order you bear them in mind is up to you. Yeah, it doesn't have to be ordered. Mathematicians, what's the distinction in mathematics between like an ordered set and a non-ordered set?
Taking discrete the semester, so
you'll get back to me on this.
Yeah.
Okay. And then finally, I think you want to bear in mind what are the background philosophical issues and the implicated tangential issues. So let me say a little about that. Romy, I hope this is helpful. Yeah. So an example of a background philosophical issue. So in this sugya of Rabbanan Lo Bayin Tirusa, I think you have this, what would you say is like a looming background issue?
Like not being
self-conscious.
Yeah, great. Zacharia and, Zacharia, great point. So what do you mean by that?
As in, a factual assumption of the sugya is that they're bound to have some sort of shkacha pratis, divine intervention, protecting them, and presumably they have no need of kind of conventional physical protection.
Yeah, so that's a great point. It's not so much like a legal issue here, but the legal issue at work in the Gemara here has this very strange presupposition that like the metaphysics of hashkacha somehow determine the proper distribution of taxes in a society. Yes? Josh? Yeah. Josh? Yeah. I mean, so it's this looming in the background. There's this really major philosophical issue that's not explicit in the Gemara. It's brought up by the Chaznish in our discussion. But I think that's like a major background philosophical issue that you want to be sensitive to when you're working on a sugya. Yeah? Yeah. I mean, this sugya is a little more unique. I don't think we had this as cleanly in the other sugyas. But I'll give you an example from like Kamdina and Hadardina. You have this background issue about how stable, like, do you want the law to be, right? Versus how malleable. But in our sugya, it's you have a very nice illustration of this. And then implicated side issues that come up that you want to figure out how does our sugya or the concepts in our sugya, how do they cohere with nearby issues in halacha? So it would be an example. What? Maybe. Yeah, maybe that could be like a, but what's something a little more immediate, you'd say, that gets, so I'll just give an example. So the idea that Talmid Chachamim shouldn't benefit from their Torah learning, right? Pretty well-established principle in Jewish law, or Mishnayos and Avos, the Gemara is elsewhere. So you say, wait, gee, how does the exemption of taxes cohere with all these things that we see elsewhere that, you know, Torah shouldn't be a kardim lach borbo, it shouldn't be a basis of social privilege. Right? So you want to figure out how does the doctrine in our sugya cohere with nearby halachic issues. And you'll see, like, for the Rambam, that's a major issue in this discussion. Anybody see the Rambam Perush Mishnayos yet? Okay, when you get to the Rambam, you see that's, like, a major issue framing his discussion. All right, so that's a little bit of just, like, some things to keep in mind when you're... Five things to keep in mind when you're... That you should try to take away when you're working through these sugyas. Romy, was that a good answer to our post-shir discussion several months ago?
Yeah.
It's good. Usually my turnover time between, like, you know, first discussing an issue and having a clear thought about it is like 3 years. So here is much shorter. It was expedited. I mean, in 2.5 years, I might have a much better thing to say about it. But this will have to do for now. All right. So let's just go back into the Gemara Rabbanan Lo Tzricha Netirusa. What's the context of the Gemara's discussion here in the first parak about Basra? Why are we talking about Rabbanan Lo Bayin Netirusa? How does this come out of the Mishnah? Josh?
Taxation to build a wall.
Yeah, the taxation to build a wall. Kofin says that Livnos Beis Shar Vidalis, etc. So we're in the middle of a discussion about the community's power to coerce its individual members to chip in for public goods. Correct? And in the middle of that discussion, the Gemara carves out an exception for the Rabbanan. Now, when you read the Gemara in Daf Zayin and Mabes through Daf Ches and Aleph, what we saw when we left off is that you actually get a sense that there are three separate issues, three separate conceptualizations of why the Rabbanan should be exempt from taxation. Yes? So what are they? So let's start with Babas Zayin and Beis very quickly. Let's just have Shmuel read this first line for us over here. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya.
Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, Raman Dosha Ad Rabban. So Rabbi Yehuda composed this tax on the Rabban for the wall. Amar Shulkish. Raman Tzrich and Nisiya. Shulkish comes and says, but they don't need to tax.
Yeah. So this is a scope issue. As was pointed out in the last year, you can see it's a contested halachic principle, right? It's not accepted by everybody, as evidenced by Rabbi Anasi imposing the tax on the Rabbanan. But at least Reish Lakish disagrees, and he says, Rabbanan lo tzricha netirusa. Now, in terms of conceptualizations, when you see that phrase, Rabbanan lo tzricha netirusa, what does it connote to you? What's the basis for Rabbanan not paying, Benji?
Taxation.
Yeah. The Rabbanan are not benefiting from the public goods of security, so therefore they should be exempt, right? So Benji's right to say this seems to shed light on the basis for imposing a tax in the first place. You're imposing the tax on the people who are benefiting from it. Some achronim use the phrase zachin ladim shlo b'fanav to characterize that principle. But on the theory that the rabbanon receive no hana, so they're not obligated to pitch in. Now, that's a pretty radical philosophical or legal position to take, right? Rabbanan lo tzricha netirusa. So what does the Gemara? The Gemara cites a bunch of psukim to substantiate this. And what do you think? Why do you think it's radical? Or why do you think it's an extreme position? Ned?
Even if they're not benefiting, they should still be paying for other people.
Yeah. So the Sam Sofer has a version of that objection, right? Let's grant that the Talmid HaKhom are not benefiting, but it's not obvious that not benefiting is sufficient reason to exempt them from the tax. In fact, in the last sugya that we looked at, what did we see? We saw all these cases where people are obligated to pitch in for communal responsibilities, even if, as an individual, you're not benefiting. Right? We saw these tshuvos about a mikvah. Community wants to build a mikvah, but let's say... this elder class of women are not going to benefit from it or use it in any way. They still have an obligation to pitch in as a member of the community, right? So some achronim are bothered by this, namely the Chassam Sofer. I think it's the Chassam Sofer. Does everybody see the objection? Yeah, you see the issue with this? What does the Chassam Sofer say to address this? Ned, since you got us started, it's the Chassam Sofer on our sugya. He says.
Right.
So what's he saying? What's his...
Vaishabhish is not for is insufficient because you might say that only applies to an individual who is particularly outstanding, but that's not a reason to separate yourself from the seaborn.
So give me the legal analogy that he gives. Why does he think this is a bad basis for exempting from it?
Because the scope is too narrow.
Well, what's the counter argument?
The thing about the yachid she kiske v'atzma ubeiso v'choma. What's going on there?
Meaning a person can help another person, because another person can also benefits, find a different way to protect himself.
Yeah, I think that's a great argument, right? He's saying what? So somebody builds a fortress around their home. They're exempt from pitching in on for communal security. He thinks that's clearly false, right? You know, like these doomsdayers, right? You know what I'm talking about? So you have like your subterranean shelter out in New Zealand, right, which could withstand a nuclear attack. So even if you have one of those, the thought is you still have a responsibility to pitch in for communal security. So why should the Talmud Chacham be any different? Yes?
Yeah.
So the Sam Sofer is actually uncomfortable with this formulation. And I think he's actually rejecting this formulation of a legal principle. Even though the Gemara clearly looks tzriche de tirusa means some of the Chachamim don't need security. Right? They don't need watchmen. Now Sam Sofer says that's not the right way to understand the legal principle at work here. Right? It's not what the Gemara says it is. So what is it? I'm just gonna call this number two. So what does the Sam Sofer say? Josh, do you wanna so Ned, read it for us? Yeah, so what's he saying with that?
And
here he's appealing to this the Gemara's analysis, one of the limudim in the Gemara, right? Yeah. Shadayim kemigdalos, to mean what?
Well,
just tell me in English what he's saying.
Meaning he protects the rest of the people by his very presence.
Yeah, exactly. He's saying the Gemara can't mean there's that they don't need the Shemira. That falls prey to the objection of the guy, the doomsdayer. So he said, it really means that the Talmid Chachamim are, you know, they're somehow providing protection, right? Or doing the things that would cause people to be safe. And so this idea, this analogy in the Pasuk to Migdal, to a fortress, is supposed to say something that like, they're actively providing protection for other people. And that's the basis of the Patur. Does everybody see that before we have questions on this?
So why build at all?
Because people aren't listening to them, right? Shehu kemigdal v'tzofa lavo mazhir la'am shehu nisharim. Right? Va'ame ha'aretz she'enam nisharim v'ne'enashim yachushu la'atzman. So the thought is like, at least in the way that Sam Sofer envisions it, the Talmid Chacham are providing this security for other people, and like the other people are destroying the defense system. That's kind of how he thinks about it. But so... that's an interesting deviation from the Gemara, but I just want to emphasize again that that's clearly a different interpretation of the exemption from taxes than the Gemara itself provides, right? At least semantically, at least in terms of what the words that the Gemara presents. Lo bai natirusa means, or lo tzrich natirusa means they don't need security. That Sam Sofer, based off the reading of the Pesukim, actually says something very different. Okay. Zev?
Yeah, no, I was just
going to
ask how he squares it with the words.
You know, Lotzrichi, you could say the Gemara just under-presented it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they don't need, but what the Gemara really meant to say is that they provide cover.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a little, it's duffa,
sure.
In my opinion. But, you know, he gets that out of the end, those other psukim that the Gemara quotes when the Gemara talks about Shadayim k'migdalos, eilu tamid chachamim. Ani choma v'shadayim k'migdalos, eilu tamid chachamim. Yeah. So. Ariel?
I'm still confused. Why are we saying it's a dogma way of understanding Lord Shri in Jerusalem? We could just say it's Shiva's Rebbe Yochanan in contrast to Shiva's Bakish, which is just Lord Shri in Jerusalem. And meaning some sort of points why Rebbe Yochanan disagreed.
Sure. If you want to say this is just a machlokas within the deyas of the Gemara, that's fine. The Chassam Sofer's presentation itself, though, yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, if you want to say that, so let me put it this way. The Gemara presents it as, here's a doctrine, Rabbanan lo tzrichei netirusa, and then you have machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about the source of it. But you have to think the Chassam Sofer is saying, no, they're not just disagreeing about the source. Once Rabbi Yochanan comes and brings his different basis, then you're already dealing with a different type of legal argument. Which is fine. I think you're right to say that Rabbi Yochanan himself doesn't say, lo tzrichei netirusa. It's just presented in the Gemara under that heading, but I think you have a very nice textual diak that maybe this is Reish Lakish, and the Chassam Sofer is really just going within Rabbi Yochanan. I think it's a nice way of reconciling that. Ezra.
Don't you run into an issue of where, I mean, if you're saying that provide protection, but you need the separate taxation because people aren't listening to them, then in practice they're not actually providing anything. Shouldn't they need, meaning like, you're providing something like,
given the facts of society, they're not providing something.
Yeah, why don't you say, okay, well, you try to provide something. Like I can say, like if I try to pay my taxes, if I go to the IRS and I go, here's a 5,000 rubber duck, or here's the amount I owe in taxes this year, but in rubber ducks, they're not going to accept it because it's not in a form that's usable.
Yeah.
So
I think you'd have to get here into like an analysis of like the metaphysics, like, so whether you're, I don't know if the right analogy is the, like, the Torah is an analogous to the rubber ducks, right? It's more like, oh, you paid your taxes. You have an incompetent government that just frivolously spends it away, right? So, like, the point is, like, no, you did your share, and it's like the bad guy is the government, right, who's spending it. So, but I think you make an interesting point about how to exactly understand the idea here, but...
Yeah, that also doesn't work so well, just because he says it's, like, the Amayar. He doesn't say it's the town, he says it's the Amayar. He doesn't say it's the people in particular.
Yeah. Depends how you cut up society, right? Is it, like... So it's like Talmid Chachamim verse, right? Zachar, you have a hand on this, right?
Yeah, I think the Chassam Sofer has a few interesting things. On Ariel's point about what does the Chassam Sofer say at Beit Reish Lakish?
Here's Zachariah.
Am I audible?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think just from my reading the Chassam Sofer, that he thinks Reish Lakish, he imputes this to Reish Lakish as well, especially from the second half where he tries to say, oh, and Reish Lakish, you know, prefers his pasuk because it allows him to go in this direction. That's kind of just one side point. I think it's more interesting is I think he's ambiguous between kind of these two ideas where, like, the Chachamim are providing a public service already by protecting people, and that's why they're getting a tax break or they're just paying it in their own way. But he also has this line where, in the one non-bolded underline, he says, "Amay aris einam nisharim v'nen nashim yachushu la'atzma." Right? It's like they're the ones who caused this, so they gotta take care of themselves. Or at the end, where he says, oh, it's all about, you know, he says, three lines down, right? Inisbatu ame aretz, hainu, etc. And he quotes Pranos, pralo olam alivshil ame aretz, right? He puts that into Reish Lakish, right? So he's very uncomfortable with the line of banam lo tzarech mitirusa, so then he just, like, shoves in the other principle in the sugya.
Yeah, so you're saying, responding to Ariel's point that the Chassam Sofer you know, is reading a lot of this Rabbi Yochanan type logic, what Ariel's calling the Rabbi Yochanan logic, into Reish Lakish, and we know that Reish Lakish himself is committed to the phrase Rabbanu Lo Tzrichin in Tirusa.
Yeah. As well as there being two different distinct ideas going on in the Sam Sofer, as in the Rabbanan doing something, providing public service for the community, and the Amei Aretz bringing this upon themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a
really, it all together.
Yeah, great point. Great. Okay, so now I want to move to a second.
Well, let's just call this the third conceptualization of the Ketor Talmid Chachamim.
That comes from the Gemara's source of Aksuve. The Gemara quotes some psukim in Ezra. Ezra, if you want to tell us the psukim in Ezra. So really, I have this children's like no Navi book for my kids, and like the last volume is Ezra, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, but like everything in Ezra, it mistakenly puts under Daniel. It's like, what is it? It's like a kid's Navi, you know, book.
Okay.
Like store, like
not
little
like
Navi. Yeah, K-N-O-W. Right, K-N-O-W. Right. This is very frustrating. It's like all the good stuff in Ezra, like you read this book, you think it's in Daniel. Yeah. Actually, I was reading it to my son, and we came across this, like the tour of taxation in this pasuk here. It's actually really good stuff. So, Ezra, what does Ezra tell us in Parag Zion of Sefer Ezra?
I give the disclaimer that I've had a weird few days, so I wasn't able to do a ton of the reading the Sogila.
I thought you were going to say that you didn't actually author Sefer Ezra. Okay. That's fine. So we can hand over the Ezra responsibilities to somebody else. Yeah. Trying your first name again.
Roni.
Not to be confused with Romi. Right?
Yeah, it's going to be confusing. You just
But you're Ranan.
No, Aaron.
Oh, Aaron, okay.
I don't know if I'm getting in trouble.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. Whatever, it's fine.
Roni, go.
Point. So I believe what's happening is that they're saying that anyone who's working the Beit HaMikdash is punted from taxes. And there's like three different kinds of taxes that they mentioned there.
Yeah, good. It's good. So, Dar Yavesh, right? Who's the guy in charge of Eretz Yisrael at the time? He exempts, while they're rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, he exempts the Kohanim Leviim, the singers, from paying these taxes. Right, I think a bunch of different taxes are mentioned in those psukim. And the Gemara seems to think that's relevant to exempting Talmidei Chachamim from taxes. Correct, Bernie?
I think so.
Yeah. Now, just to point out, there's a bit of an issue in Rashi. Rashi seems to say that this p'tur extends down to Knesset Gedola, but like Achronim pointed out, it's not clear where Rashi gets that from. The Gemara itself, the Pesukim themselves, seems to just be referring to the Kohanim Leviim and the people who worked in the Beis HaMikdash. Tosos gives us a way of connecting the dots of the argument, right? So how does the Gemara get from the p'tur of the Kohanim Leviim and the workers in the Beis HaMikdash to the exemption of Talmidei Chachamim or Rabbanan from taxation? So what does he tell us, Bernie?
Tell us what it says. V'sha'yu asukim v'melechet shamayim v'minyan min ha-mikdash v'chinami im ha-til mas alav de-Torah.
Okay. So what does that mean?
That means that since they were dealing with melechet shamayim when they were building the Beit HaMikdash, they're exempt, and therefore the same thing should apply to people that teach or learn Torah.
Yeah. Yeah, those things that go, but it's like a common set. Right, the thing that's picked out by Dar Yavesh's tour of taxation also picks out the Rabbana. Now, my question is, what's the relationship between that rationale, what I have here, number three, and number one, and Rabbana Lo Tzrichin et Tirusa? So you could say, oh, everything that's Melech HaShemayim is, contributing to security. But that's a strange reading, right? That's kind of Chasar Min HaSefer. You don't find it. Or you don't find that type of metaphysical claim that the singers in the Beis HaMikdash are somehow contributing to security. And that's, I think, why Tosa says, oh, it's like the fact that they're Osei from Lach HaShemayim, that's a basis to exempt from taxation. So the question is, well, what's that basis, right? And it seems to be distinct from the both explanation one and explanation number two, both of which seem to be variations of security rationales. So what's the Malachas Shemayim idea here? Josh?
I think maybe a couple possibilities. One is maybe kind of like a non-profit svara, like they're not, like we see sources later on that are talking about, you know, Tomato Thumb aren't trying to make money. They're running a non-profit, and so we're not going to tax them for that. Or maybe even you're trying to just incentivize Malachas Shemayim with like a tax break. I'm not going to say that.
Okay, good. So let's take both of those for a second. So number one, what was your first point?
That it's like they're working at a non-profit. They're not getting taxed because they're not, they don't...
So as opposed to, Osek B'Malachas Shemayim is supposed to contrast with like Osek B'Parnasa or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you take like the later sources and like combine with those lists.
Yeah. So the thought here maybe is like people in pursuit of monetary wealth should be taxed, but people who are not pursuing that shouldn't be taxed. One way of thinking of this is like, oh, if you are somebody who like profits off, someone who profits off markets and things like that, then you have to contribute financially to them. But maybe if you're not, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I love that argument. But you want to say that it's like what we saw later on in the Chassam Sofer, right? He has a distinction along these lines. Something about some Malachas Shemayim. Malachas Shemayim is meant to contrast with income. Yeah? Do you guys think that's plausible, Josh's first suggestion? Might be. Might be plausible. Yeah? So the thought is, like, it's only if you're in a money-making pursuit, then you should be financially liable for contributing.
Although it's not just anyone that's not trying to make money, because it's only if you're doing Malachas Shemayim. Like,
yeah,
it's not like
so some combination, right? And I think the second point you want to make is that this is more about like a...
Incentive.
You want to incentivize people, maybe, right? It's like they say in West Hempstead that if you're a clergy, you don't pay property taxes. So you know if that's true. Where's the West Hempstead crew?
It's pretty good. That,
yeah, it's Chari, is it true?
Baruch Hashem.
I think that is, yes. So it's something like that, right? You want to, I guess, incentivize people to go into Malachas Shemayim. That's an interesting way of thinking about it. Did you have a third point, Josh?
I think that was it.
Those are the two. Zoldi?
Maybe it's for the people who are not in Malachas Shemayim, who are not as busy in Malachas Shemayim, to have more respect for those in Malachas Shemayim, who are more respectful for those who are in Malachas Shemayim.
You think you have more respect for people who don't pay taxes?
Yeah, like that. You
walk through Penn Station, you see the homeless people, and you say like, "Oh,
no,
you don't pay taxes." Like,
you see, but someone would roll out with like a red carpet, but they like, you know,
they're respected.
That they have like a certain level
right.
of like dignity, a certain level of respect
right.
that therefore like you kind of grows on you.
Interesting. That's like if you're very rich, like you're not really paying any income taxes, right? It's like, it's an interesting way of thinking about it. I don't know. I don't know if I love the idea of like. That it's, I guess I would formulate that more in terms of like maybe some sort of societal recognition of a contribution, maybe. If I had to put it your way,
yeah.
Benjamin, you could say something similar.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that.
I'm not gonna write it down then.
I was gonna say that we read it kind of like in conjunction with Beyond Rabbah, and that like in both cases like. That when you're Osek B'Malachas Shemayim, you're contributing to
yeah.
society. So you take, there's like credit to debt, so you take on the security and the roads and everything that, you know,
yeah.
the society provides you, and then you, but instead of paying taxes, you pay on
yeah, yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's kind of what, that's one way of making sense of what Benji was saying. Sorry, about what Josh was saying. What Benji said is one way of making sense of what Josh said. That... Malachas Shemayim is like you're contributing to society, right? It's by raising the spiritual caliber of society. So that's a kind of contribution. But notice it's non-shmira based, right? It's not like you don't need security. You do need security on this theory. Just like we're giving you a tax credit to offset.
Also,
Zolti, you could put your point in similar terms.
Yeah,
right? Just like not in you just you, well, because you don't want to say it's like contributing, right? You want to say it's just like a way of giving recognition for.
All right, I'm gonna put it with this idea over here.
Welcome.
It could be like an incentive or like you throw a little covered. I'm actually not so cynical about what you're saying because I think there's a way of understanding it, which I'm going to get to at the end. So your thought is that, oh, it's a good way of giving public recognition to people who are mostly from Lech Shemayim.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair point. Ned, you have a point, then Shmuel?
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of it. You guys saying Oskim Lech Shemayim? Doesn't say they're Asukim in Lech Shemayim.
Say it again?
Doesn't say they're Asukim in Lech
Shemayim. Yeah, so you think the Vav is after the Samach.
They're very, very busy doing Lech Shemayim. They're constantly doing that stuff. And I don't know what that would look like.
So they were consumed by Malach HaShemayim.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean?
Like they don't have time. It sounds like they don't have time to pay taxes.
To make money. Yeah. They don't have time to file. They can't, like... interesting. Asukim is like they're consumed.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting. What do you guys think of that? It's a very extreme empirical inference to say that therefore like they have no time. Maybe the thought is like they're not making money on the side. They don't have there's no side hustle.
There's nothing to tax.
What?
There's nothing to tax. They don't have money.
So like that's like the idea here. There's no income.
Yeah,
maybe. So it's a thought. I want to think more about Shasukim versus Oskim. This relates to something we'll see later on about like whether like if you also have a side hustle, right? What happens if you're like both doing both at the same time? Romy, you have a hand. Let's take your hand.
Yeah, Kobe and I were talking about this during Seder. I think it just gets a little bit more complicated when you think about the fact that they're only exempt from certain kinds of like why security then, right? It's just that happens to be the tax credit or the incentive. I mean, it doesn't suggest a better explanation for this, but I just think it's and it makes it a little harder.
That's a great point, except here I would tap into, I would make a move like Ariel made. How do you pronounce your name? Ariel?
Or? Ariel.
Well?
No, Ariel.
So the Y is like...
Just silent.
Interesting. So it's Ariel.
Yeah, normal pronunciation, nothing special.
Got it. Not Ariel.
No. Hebrew is spelled normal.
Right, got it. It's misleading in the... English. Great. Yeah, so Ariel's point that, it's actually not clear, Romy, what this view in the Gemara would say about other taxes. It's like later on when we see that Tamei Chachamim do have to go out for the Rechov and for the Mayim, depending which view you take. If you go with this theory, you might say, well, then you would disagree with that later statement in the Gemara. So, but I hear you. So it's just an open question about how those two joints link. Shmuel?
Yeah, just to go back to the Volpe's point, maybe this will allow me to critically give it its own proper category, which is deserved. Instead of calling it, you should maybe call it a car to tow. I think they're very similar, but it's definitely different from an incentive.
Yeah.
To say that people who are involved in Clay Kodesh get a tax break, so incentivizing them is still not necessarily financially beneficial to them. But to call it a car to tow recognition, I mean, they're two different things a little, but I think it's a different category.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you think I shouldn't put it...
The reason why I'm
putting them together here is because I think Josh's point about an incentive is so weak that it doesn't deserve its own category.
Wow, that was a surprise.
So I wanted to have the recognition thing to legitimize the category. So I agree with you.
Why not even get on the board in the first place?
it's a good enough point. Okay. So those are, I would say, three...
Or four.
What?
Or four.
Well, these are, I think, Malach HaShemayim, there are different ways of precisifying Malach HaShemayim. And then we have the Lo Bayinu Tirusa and this theory that some super, they're actively providing security, right? I wanted to just move now just to the last major statement that you get in the Gemara. What's the last major theory you get from the Gemara? From the story on Chesamid Aleph?
Yeah.
Josh?
But it's more about Nezikin, that all the Amayars are the cause of all the world, the woes of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So since the 20th Amayar aren't causing the damage, they don't have to pay.
Exactly. The Gemara in Daf Ches Lamed Aleph has this whole story with Rebbe, which we'll look at. Rebbe didn't want to support the Ami Haaretz, and he says, I'm not supporting them because Ein Paranus Boli Olam El Bishvil Am Haaretz. Right? And the Gemara tells this story also with Rebbe. What's the story, Josh?
If this is the right thing, there was like a tax on all the people. The people came and said they didn't want to pay. They got an argument. Half of them left. So eventually, everyone left. And once all the Amei Haaretz finally left the city, then they got rid of the tax. So therefore, apparently, all taxes are because of Amei Haaretz.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Pretty. I would say not PC conclusion of the Gemara. But the Gemara's conclusion is that from this story, that the cause of taxation, so the cause of the financial difficulties that require a community to raise taxes, is the actions of the Amei Haaretz. Yes? So what type of explanation is that for the Patur of Talmidei Chachamim? The thought here is that a tax should be imposed on the person who's the cause of the harm, right? Or the person who creates the cost. It's like sometimes we think that people maybe who pollute the atmosphere with carbon gases, they should be the ones who have to bear the costs of environmental cleanup, right? A gas company that spills gas in the ocean, they should bear the public costs of cleaning up the ocean. And so the thought here is that, the Talmidei Chachamim don't contribute to the harm, so they should be exempt from these types of taxes. That's a very different type of argument from saying, they're Osek B'Melachas Shemayim in any of these three ways. It's also very different from the, they don't need protection. The thought here is that this is about the cause, right? Who's the cause of the costs? I think that's what you get out of the story on Daf Ches Lamed Aleph. Two Rishonim seem to be already very clear about that. So let's see two formulations. The Meiri on Ches Lamed Aleph. Benji, did you see this Meiri on Ches Lamed Aleph?
I think so.
So why don't you just read Zesha Yerbeinu HaKadosh Matil Atzmo?
Yeah. Zesha Yerbeinu HaKadosh Matil Atzmo. L'hayod Achrizi
La'Amei Haaretz. Achzari.
Achzari La'Amei Haaretz.
To be cruel to the Amei Haaretz. Why did he allow himself to be cruel to the Amei Haaretz and not provide for them?
Zesha Avko Omer Ein Korani Bali Olam El Bishvil Amei Haaretz.
So
this is the only reason why we have terrible things like taxes and early deaths is because of the IRS.
Definitely on the taxation side, right? He's saying that these taxations come because of the IRS, correct?
Right.
So he seems to be explaining, the Meiri is explicitly linking this rationale to the Patur of Rabbanan from Masim. Right. And you see this also in the Yad Arma. Let's see over here. The Yad Arma and Ches Lamed Aleph. Did you get a chance to see this, Benji? Halamadita, after the story of the crown that was stolen on Daf Ches.
Right. Halamadita she'en b'nei korin ba'onshin ve'en olam ela b'shvil ha'me'aretz.
So notice, lefika, right, because of this fact about Ein Paranus Boli Olam b'shvil ha'me'aretz, therefore, yes, that's fine, right? So because of this, Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from taxes. Okay, so that's a distinct fourth conceptualization of why they're pater. Great. And I think that kind of exhausts the main discussions or the main conceptualizations of Rabban Lo Nabai Netirusa. Everybody agree with me on that? At least that this exhausts the main conceptualizations? Yes? Yes, how do you agree? Yeah, okay. So, let me just make one point here about a related sugya, and then I want to get into the Chazon Ish. So we have Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif in Brachos, Daf Gimel, based off the Gemara there on Dalav and Beis Hamid Aleph. Anybody see those two Gemaras? The Gemara Brachos, Ariel, Wernick?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, what is basically to summarize, what does the Gemara there say in Daf Hey and Daf Dalid? Yeah, what do you call the prayers before you go to sleep? Yep.
But then you kind of say that you would say some small anyways, but you still need a little bit of protection.
Yeah. And what does that mean? You want to say, what's the reason why Talmud Chacham doesn't have to say...
Because Torah Tal Mishmato.
Yeah, what does he cite as the basis for that? Yeah, but also Daf Ches. So the Rabbeinu Yonah is really the only one to link the two sugyas, or maybe the first to link the two sugyas. What do you make of that? All right, is this an obvious connection? No? Well, I mean, it's intuitive, right? He's saying, hey, there's a din that Talmid Chacham are patur from taxes. There's a din that Talmid Chacham don't have to say Kriyas Shema Amita. He's saying, oh, it's the same sugya. That's Rabbeinu Yonah's move. I just want to point out that there might be two reasons to distinguish here. Zev?
Yeah, you can say there's another reason that the potter from Kriyas Shema Amita, maybe it's not for protection.
What would that be?
I mean, I guess, like, you know, if, like, Kriyas Shema Amita is meant to, like, I don't know, round off your day with Torah or something. Or...
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're saying there could be other reasons for Kriyas Shema in the first place. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure true. So it's an interesting extension on that ground. Good point. Yeah.
I mean, I'd say maybe slightly different because in our sugya, it's talking about physical protection, whereas over here, I mean, we're saying that the Chachamim were metaphysically protected, and Shema is also like metaphysical protection, so it's a little bit different. But.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's kind of nice, right? It's like one thing that's nice about his move is to say, look, it's one thing, you know, if we're just trying to get out of a tax liability, right? But he's saying, no, no, no. It's like even this din holds true even when you're not trying to get out of a financial liability, right? Even just like on the pure religious level, like the principle is affirmed. So I think that's actually a nice part of his analysis. But I want to say two things. Number one, notice that the subject, the set of people discussed in each case is slightly different. Maybe it's not significant. But how does the Gemara in our sugya refer to it? To the set of people who are exempt?
Rabbanan.
Yeah, Rabbanan. The Gemara in Brachos uses a different phrase. It says, "Im Talmid Chacham hu." And I just want to just flag, although I don't have much to say about it now, about what's the relationship between those two categories. Right? I know in my source sheet, I think I wrote Talmid Chachamim Lotzvichin et Yerusha? It's an interesting question whether those two things are meant to be the same, right? I would say Rabbanan usually connotes some sort of a official position, yeah? Whereas Talmid Chacham just connotes a certain level of scholarship. So it's something to bear in mind whether those two points are different. Clearly, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't think they are. Number two... the other reason, another reason to maybe distinguishing the two sugyas is exactly because one of them is about an exemption from a social cost, right? From chipping into a communal burden. Now you might think that Rabbanan lo tzrichin et Yerusha might be significant only in that sense, not beyond that. So I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But the underlying idea is that it's not so obvious that when we say Rabbanan lo tzrichin et Yerusha, it's meant to convey anything like a deep metaphysical claim about the protection of Talmid Chachamim. Maybe it also does. But you might say that it's not meant to do that. I mean, Viharaya, especially in the non-Shmira-based views, right, the Gemara is clearly saying something like, oh, they're not pursuing Mammon. Oh, they're maybe they should be recognized, and Shmuel's point about an Akar Satov for their being Asukim. So you might say that even Rabbanan lo Bayin et Yerusha is really just meant as a normative principle for the purpose of being exempt from taxes. I know no one's going to like that. it's not obvious that it extends just into pure ritual realm being Pata from Kriyashma. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Okay? But clearly, Rabbi Yonah doesn't think so. Rabbi Yonah thinks that Torasa Mishamrasa is the same principle for being exempt from taxes as it is for Hilchos Kriyashma. So just, and you guys are like, wait, that's really weird. Like, what does that mean that it's just a principle for tax exemption? But we're gonna come back to that in a minute. Some hands on this, Ariel? Let me just take actually Zacharia first.
Yeah, I know you kept saying several times we're going to go back to this, but maybe just to look forward, I think there's a certain orientation where if something, you know, is able to make it in Choshen Mishpat, it can make it anywhere. You know, I said if we're able, willing to kind of put our money where our mouth is and say, like, oh, the Rabbanan really don't need Shmira. And maybe like the strong version, that if there's a city, Shekula Rabbanan, yeah, they don't have to build a wall, right? They really don't need to. If we're willing to apply this principle in a place where there's money involved, then Kol Shekein, we would apply it in places where it's just more ritual,
right,
more individual.
Totally hear it. I totally hear it. That's one of the things that's like nice about Rabbi Yonah, right? As you said, putting our money with where our mouth is. But I think there's reason to think the exact opposite, which I want to get to when we get in a moment. So, point taken. I think that's the nice thing about Rabbi Yonah. Yeah, great. Ariel?
Just addressing the second half of the Rabbi Yonah there, where he says the notion of on my Shemor, that's when the only thing we should violate about Pidla. That isn't that also a limitation on the idea of maybe a couple of three things here or so?
Yeah.
Is that really meaning it seems like in a standard case where there's not a pressing danger, then we say they can rely on principle. But if there's a real pressing threat, I guess then.
Yeah. Very good point. You can see here I made that comment in the parentheses agreeing with you. Ariel's pointing out on the scope and application side of things, Rabbi Yonah is very important. Because Rabbi Yonah says, why does the Gemara say that in some contexts a Talmid Chacham requires Shimur? Right, so he quotes the Gemara Brachos in the Dalet, Gimel Tzvichim Shimur Chol Echaya Chasam V'Kalav Yishom Rav Talmid Chacham. So that seems to contradict our sugya. So he distinguishes between different types of dangers. Ariel, that's your point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for some dangers, they do require shmira. That's like a significant limitation on this idea. Actually, some achronim, when they explain the first machlokas in our sugya between, I think, Rabbi Yudah Nasi, who imposed the tax on the Chachamim, and Reish Lakish, who said you shouldn't. So those achronim, like Dayan Yaakov, say, oh, they're actually debating exactly this point, Ariel. You know, whether this tax was the type of tax that Chachamim requires, like, was it saving them from certain security concerns that even Talmid Chacham need to be saved from? Yeah, there's an important limitation on the application level. Kobe?
Just in terms of like the Rabbanan versus Talmid Chacham distinction.
Yeah.
Like the Rabban is kind of mentioned, like his answer kind of says like he thinks like some of the people like don't really qualify, he doesn't think anyone really qualifies,
yeah.
But he says like he's not going to investigate it, so like maybe he's like implying that, like, yeah, it really is like when we said like, Talmid Chacham, just kind of have to listen to them.
Yeah.
They say so.
It's like called Push It Yado.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of what
you say. Yeah. So it's like, you know, anybody with like a cloth or something.
Yeah,
what?
The whole thing.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about how, who classifies. We'll get that a little later on. So for now, I want us to move to the Chazon Ish, which I think really breaks the sugya wide open. So the Chazon Ish here has, I think, the best objection to the core concept at the heart of our sugya, Rabbanu lo tzrichin et Yerusha. And what does he say? What's his objection? How does he open this? This is another great example where you could see this is such a fundamental issue. To my mind, it's the most fundamental issue at the sugya, in the sugya, and no one discusses it until the Chazon Ish. What? Yeah, in some chanalanes. Right, just goes to show you that it's not always true that the most important questions are settled or discussed, taken up by the Rishonim. Right here, it's a pretty contemporary Achron who would say, raises the most important question in the sugya. So Ariel tells, "Ein som kanal nes." Yeah.
Should I read or should I?
Don't read. Tell us outside what his points are.
He's been saying that you can't. The minhag should be that you shouldn't rely on a miracle happening, and you should follow the minhag of the olam of their eretz.
Yeah.
And
so he's,
that if you had the yirval kohanim, you wouldn't just have the luwal and yourself to attack. You would build or even the yirval rabbanon. They would still build the luwal.
Yeah, so the main point here is Ein Som Kanal Nes, as you said. And he quotes a few Gemaras that say, hey, look, you know, you can't rely on miracles, right? You should always exercise reasonable care. He quotes the Gemara in Brachos, Hanheg ben Minag Derech Eretz, Gemara in Shabbos, Al Yamad Adam ben Malkum HaSakana, Gemara in Chulin. So that seems to be directly at odds with our Gemara, right? This is like a question that's like worthy of Tosos to ask, right? How do you square our Gemara with these other claims? So I think that's a really good question, right? And he even goes so far to say that like maybe Chachamim have a right to compel each other to build a wall, right? So Rabbanon Bayin et Yerusa, yeah. So what's his answer? Like how does he make sense of this? Does everybody agree this is like a really good question? Yeah. And I just want to point out, again, this is the Chazanish, right? This is 20th century. His answer is basically to deny, I think, the core principle at the heart of the sugya, right? He basically walks away from the more central position of Rabbanu Lo Tzrichin Et Yerusa, right? So he says, oh, yeah, actually, they do need Et Yerusa, and here's an afkamina. If it's a city of all coming to Chachamim, they have a legal right to compel each other to build a wall. Right? I think that's what he says. Let's see. He says, "Vafshar adivir dechula rabbanon kofin zezel livnos choma." That's how many of you would have arrived at that halachic conclusion just from reading the sugya itself?
Well, I guess the incentive and just doing part.
And hold off. Let's work with the tzrich. He's really going on the lo tzrichin et yerusa discussion,
yeah.
Right? He doesn't say like, "Oh, I don't like that shita. Let me talk about the other shitas." Right, he's going even within the central. He's interpreting even Reish Lakish's proposition of Rabbanu Lo Tzrichin Et Yerusa. Okay, so then he says, "Okay, so what's the significance of this legal principle?" Josh, you look like you're itching to get out.
I read that line very differently.
In the Chazanish.
Yeah, that line right there. That it's not that they need protection. It's in Afinami they don't really need protection if they're only Rabbanim, but because they're not going to be some Kanal and Ace, they have to build the wall anyways. But they don't need protection. Right?
That's fine. That's fine. I'm just saying the Gemara says Hamicham are exempt from taxes because they don't need a wall. And Chazani says no, they do need a wall, and they could compel each other to build a wall.
Right.
What? I think that's a really radical Chiddush. No.
I guess. But yeah. Okay.
You don't agree?
I'm just saying that, I don't know, he's agreeing fundamentally that they don't need protection, and as long as other people can build the wall, then they don't have to build the wall. It's just like a technicality that when it's only not, you need someone to build the wall, otherwise you're going to be relying on the mace. This is how I read it.
Okay, but okay. I would have read the Gemara as saying, like, that's the whole point, that, like, here the halacha says that the metaphysics of the miracle or the divine providence will watch over them is so strong that it even rises to the level of a legally enforceable immunity. Right? An immunity from having to chip in for protection. No?
And yeah. As long as there are Hameyah.
Okay, so that's the Chazanish's move.
Yeah, okay.
But I wouldn't have read that. I mean, I would not have looked at the Gemara that way otherwise. Am I the only one here? No?
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
Okay. Sekhar, you agree?
I'm sorry, do you mind being that?
Yes. Just the Chazanish is a big Kiddush.
This point specifically on the Yershikul Rabbanon?
Well, the fact that he means that there is a legal right to compel Tamid Chachamim to build walls. Right? So what's his move then to explain the Gemara? Ariel?
Since that they're not going to be, they're almost non-profit workers in a certain sense, because they're learning in Torah, and therefore we're going to
Yeah, so he says that the Gemara's din only applies to a case where it's a mixed city. The theory is that, look, we could It's just a question of who are we going to impose the costs on? And given that we could impose it on one class or the other, or both of them, we're going to choose to impose it on only one class, right? Only on the Amiaris. Now, why is that? Why should we do that? So if from the Gemara, I would have said, oh, because only one class requires the Shmira. Right, but what does the Chazanish say? He says, that's not the reason. What does he say? Yeah, so here he seems to come on to some variation of this idea, right, that was mentioned. One of Josh's interpretations of Asukim B'Lach HaShemayim versus Asukim B'Parnasas Mammon. They're like, oh, like one class is out there to make money and one class isn't, so let's impose it on the class that's out there to make money, right? Now, it's an interesting question. What if the Amiarets, like, they're beach surfers? Right? Like, they're not out there for Asagas Mama.
Wasn't there a somebody said earlier on, the case with Anu and
Mokanpe? Hold on for a second. No. Right, let's say the class of Amiarets is not out there for Asagas Mama either. Right? They're all pursuing PhDs in literature. I'm trying to think of, like, what's a worthless pursuit. No, I'm kidding. It's something, you know, I don't know. They're all training for the Olympics. I don't know. What's anything, something that we'd agree on is like a non-worth... Well?
Basket weaving.
Basket weaving? Really? You don't like basket weaving?
Not a fan of that.
So it's actually so the Chazdi seems to think that then now we're moving away from the Nitirusa thing to this idea of Mishtad Lemas Sagas Mammon. Okay, and then he says, okay, he throws in something else here and he says, well, Bahachanami, the Chacham don't have to pay. Achareisha be'emes torasan magenas aleihem ve'enam nesunin tachas mikre hateva kishar b'nei adam. He's saying, well, it is true that they have this type of hashgacha. So it seems like you combine that together with the fact that they're not going after asagas mammon, and that somehow explains why they should be exempt from taxation. And then he even throws in ein chiv al rabbanim litein chelkam. We could even consider it, that's a bit of theory number four, right? We could even consider it as if, oh, the tax was imposed because of the Amiharet. So the Chazanish basically says, like, Rabban Labai Nitirusa is not the legal principle that explains the exemption from taxation. It's really a hybrid of three separate considerations, right? This idea that we could look at it as if the tax was imposed because of the Amaretz, the fact that the Talmid Chacham are not after Asagas Mammon, combined with some metaphysically true claim that the Chacham are Lobai Netirusa. But the legal principle that is at work here is not really Rabban Lobai Netirusa. Does everybody see that? That's the Chazanish's analysis. Nate, do you have a hand on this?
I didn't read all three together. I thought they were just different considerations that he was raising.
What do you mean?
I didn't read this the same thing. Because all of these three possibilities are present, therefore they're other. These are different explanations that work on their own.
To my mind, he cites all three of these to explain the din. I didn't get the sense that each was sufficient on its own. He throws in a Torah Patrosim Kimachin and Mishtadlin. That's like the main basis for the Patur. Right?
Yeah, and then he says there are other explanations.
I think he's saying those combine to explain why the Rabban are not Chayev. Ein Chiyav Ra'al Rabban Litin Chalkam Dish Lachshov Shekol Amas Hutal Bishvil Amiharetz. Like we could consider it as if like all this tax comes because of the Amaratim.
Indeed, I read that as sufficient condition.
Yeah? Anybody else have a preferred reading? Anybody have a strong view like Ned? No? Okay, but the importance of this Chazanish is to move away from Rabban Lo Tzricha and Tirusa. What's his main ground for moving away from this? He doesn't think the metaphysics of divine protection for Talmid Chachamim could explain the legal, the halachic rule of the exemption from taxation. Or like one's in like a hashkafic point of view, and the hashkafic point of view in his mind can't ground the halachic conclusion because of Ein Som Chen Ala Neis. Correct? That I think is a very intriguing background principle. And it's very consistent here with the Ramban in Vayikra. Chavav, anybody see that Ramban in Vayikra? Mm-hmm. Preparing for this? Do you see it, Ernie?
A little bit.
Well, let me just think, Romy has a hand. Romy, have a hand?
Yeah, I'm just a little bit confused about how those three things fit together with the Chazanish.
In his mind?
Yeah.
So, what don't you like?
Okay, for starters, it seemed like three different answers. But also, like, the formulation that, if we have to put it on someone, we should put it on these people because they pursue money, also seems to not be exactly logical in the first place. Meaning, maybe that was just the way that you formulated it, but, like, who said that it has to only be put on one class? Right?
Yeah.
It sounds like much more like it's a p'tur specifically, meaning not put it on these people, but don't put it on these people.
Notice the Chaznish has different formulations. At one point he says, because Tamid Chamim are not Mishtadon al Aslagas Mamon, ain't Litol Mehem Mamona, right? We shouldn't take money from them, right? And then he says, over here, Hilkach roi talmud chacham lepotro mina tirusa ulahati alas chachoma al shar b'nei ayir. It's appropriate to exempt the talmud chacham and to impose the tax on other people, right? That's only assuming that you could raise the money from somebody else,
right?
Because he thinks in the year shekulo talmud chacham, everybody has to chip in, right? So he's saying, assuming we could give them a tax exemption, let's give them a tax exemption. But then he says, this is why it's appropriate to not charge them. This is why it's appropriate to exempt them. Here you might even say Talmidei Chachamim have like a chiyuv, like it's appropriate to exempt them. And then over here, though, he says, Mikol makom ein chiyuv al Rabbanan liten chelkam. Right? There's no obligation on the Rabbanan, which sounds like it's not just a chiyuv on the other people to not tax the Rabbanan, but it's an actual p'tur that the Chachamim have. So maybe he's even talking about different aspects of the din, like ones why it's appropriate for the tax collectors to not charge the Rabbanan, and a different one is like why there's a p'tur on the Talmud.
Yeah, I mean, but then you also have to add, right, b'shvil ha'aretz, that thing, and he also says, right, achrei shebe'emet Torah san magenes aleihen, a little earlier. So I don't know if that's because he's not sure which of the reasons it is.
Yeah, it's a bit of a chunt.
Right.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think the Chaznish's answer is elegant. I just think what's interesting is like how much he wants to move away from like Lobain and Nitirusa being a halachic rule in and of itself.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, if you want to speculate, so I want to say a little more then about the Chaznish. So how do you guys make sense of this? So what's the Chaznish doing? What's like maybe like a cleaner way of thinking of the Chaznish? He's saying, look, Ein Som Chen Ala Neis. Were the principle of Lobai Netirusa, or Rabban Lobai Netirusa, to be true, we would violate the principle of Ein Som Chen Ala Neis. Correct? Yeah. And by the way, I gave you this Ramban in Vayikra, where the Ramban here talks about very famous analysis of Ramban. You know, people who are engaged in Torah mitzvahs, they're tachas hashkacha of Hashem, so Hashem looks out for them. Like, they won't even, if you're perfectly engaged in Torah mitzvahs, you won't even need to go to the doctor. You guys familiar with this Ramban? Okay, just, if you have a chance, work through it. Then the Ramban says, wait a second, what do you do about having to pay tsar, ripoy, shavas? But why is ripoy one of the payments? If, like, the Torah itself says you don't need a doctor if you're entirely committed to mitzvahs, what's the Ramban's answer?
Halacha doesn't take mitzvahs into account.
Yeah, exactly. A Torah, here, right over here. The Rabban Baker says, Ke'a Torah lo tismoch dinel anisim. Maybe these are metaphysically true, but the Torah doesn't create its set of laws relying on the metaphysics of Hashkacha. Yes? So what the Ramban is doing is he's saying, look, maybe there are some like metaphysical or metaphysically true facts, right? So maybe there are some metaphysically true facts. Yes? But at the normative level, this can't be taken into it, cannot be taken into account. Because like Ramban says, you know, Torah lochismok dinel anisim. Right? So it's not the case that the normative level is going to be grounded in this metaphysically true thing. Yes? So then you might ask, well, what's the relationship between Rabban Lobayin and Tirusa as a metaphysical fact and as a normative halachic fact? What's the relationship between those two? Kaznisha said that one can't be explainable in terms of the other. So basically the problem?
Can you explain that again?
Yeah. The Chazanish, the Gemara says, Rabban Labayin et Tirusa, they don't need protection. There's two ways of interpreting that. One is like a metaphysical claim, right? That like, Talmid Chachamim don't need protection. Yes? That's the metaphysically true way of interpreting it. Another way of interpreting it is it's a legal perspective. It's a normative rule, meaning the system of law treats Talmid Chachamim as if they didn't need protection. Regardless of whether it's true or false, whether they need it or not. Okay? The Chazanish seems to be saying that when the Gemara invokes Lo Tzricha Netirusa, the Gemara cannot be invoking it in this sense of metaphysically true description of stuff, because that's inadmissible as a doctrine of halacha, right? So the Gemara is clearly just invoking it in this sense, like a normative rule, like the halacha treats it as if Talmid Chachamim don't require a Netirusa. Because the halachic rule can actually be dependent on some divine providence or divine intervention. Yes?
So why is he asking about it? It's all kind of like this. He thinks that it's not a real...
Well, that's what blocks us from saying that this rule is meant to be an actual description of the protection of Talmid Chachamim. Right? Everybody see that? So why is that significant? So the reason why I think it's significant is because... Let me say one more thing to help motivate this, if you need further motivation. You guys know the Rav's like famous thing about evil? Right? It's like, what?
What, not why?
Yeah, something along those lines. You know, the response, the halacha says that if evil befalls your community, you have to do tshuva, right? And the Rav's point is it doesn't mean, and you're supposed to say, well, it's because of the bad things that we did that these evil events fell upon us. And the Rav says, the halacha doesn't mean that as like a metaphysically true claim. You can't actually know whether the person who was killed in a car crash was killed in a car crash because of shetel wearing, right? So the Rav's point is that it's got to be, what the halacha really means is that as a normative obligation, your perspective should be that the evil came because of this bad event. But you don't mean that as like a belief or as like a metaphysically true description of why it came about. Everybody see that? So it's like the difference between like the perspective you should adopt, practically speaking, and like what you believe to be actually the true causal mechanisms of the universe. And the Chazanish, I think, is saying something similar over here. Rabban Labayin at Jerusalem is at the normative level, not at the metaphysically true level. Now, the reason why I think that's important is because, getting back to Zachariah's point, you could view the din, and you could answer all these other questions like the Sam Sofer had. Sam Sofer's objection was, wait a second, even if you were a doomsday person and you built your own underground protection fortress, you still have to chip in for the communal, right, for the communal security. Yes? But I think once you go for this approach that I'm reading into the Chazanish, the point of the din is not that as a fact, Hamidachanim Labayna Tirusa, but Chazanish says, well, it's really combined with these other considerations, right? It means like, you could even say we as a halacha, we give the Hamidachanim an exemption so that we could foster the perspective that Tamir Chachamim lo bayin etirusa. So we see the move. So it's actually very similar. What I'm saying, based off the Chazon Ish analysis, is actually very close to this idea about giving recognition for Melech HaShemayim. But not only are you giving recognition to Melech HaShemayim, you're giving recognition through a normative rule that ties it to perception of Talmidei Chachamim not being or having a special type of hashgacha. So basically, that you tie that into the din itself. Yes. So why are Talmidei Chachamim exempt from taxes? To give expression to the special status in the world of hashgacha that Talmidei Chachamim have. That's the beauty of going for this normative explanation divorced from the metaphysically true explanation. And I think that's what the Chazon Ish is really getting at in his analysis. By saying, Rabbanu lo bayin etirusa, that's true, but that's not the reason, that's not the thing that explains the din. The thing that explains the din is that, we want to impose it on the Am Haaretz because they're involved in Melechus Mammon. But it's tied to the fact that it also happens to be true that lo bayin etirusa. Yeah? It's also tied to the fact that the Amaratsav are the cause of the Nezik in general. Everybody understand what I'm saying? Whether you agree or don't agree? Okay. So let me get back to my promissory note to Zachariah. Here's where you might break the connection to the Kriya Shema discussion. Because you might say the whole point of the Kriya Shema discussion, first of all, is much more analogous to an Ir Shekula Tamei Chachamim. Or they do need the protection. They do need the protection, and they could force each other to pitch in for the protection. But more importantly, it's not obvious that in the Kriya Shema example, which is like a private issue, it's between the person on his own bed, but whether he's saying Kriya Shema. It doesn't necessarily tie in to giving this kind of recognition to the status of Talmidei Chachamim through a social rule of not having to chip in for taxes. So you might say, if it's about the metaphysically true component of it, then yeah, you're right, then you shouldn't have to say Kriya Shema Lamita either. But if it's about tying it into these other considerations of Osikim Melech HaShemayim and giving special recognition to Talmidei Chachamim within the tax system, then it's not obvious that the same principle applies automatically to Kriya Shema. Sarya, do you see what I'm getting at, or yes?
I hear.
Okay. Yeah. Hands. Ned.
2 points. One, if you're reading of the Kriya Shema Gemara, then what we're saying here is that there is a metaphysical truth. It's not relevant to halachic.
Right. The halacha is like giving, the halacha is a way of signaling or gesturing towards that or giving recognition to it, but it's not the way we explain number one. It's not that they don't need Shmira and therefore they're pater. But the fact that they don't require Shmira is not the cause of their exception.
The second thing is, I think the story with Rebbe on Aleph, with the whole back and forth of whether, I think that's about this concept of whether or not the principle of in front of whether or not that should play a role in determining halakha. So in that situation, at the end of the day, the application of that principle resulted in pragmatic pragmatic failure where the actually something is coming. There are some Korean homes who now would not have gotten food, did not get food when they should have gotten food because of the whole. When you implement these types of principles in society, it creates there are a bunch of challenges that arise.
Interesting. Yeah, we're going to talk about that case on Thursday. Yeah. Okay, so let's stop here. On Thursday, which is our next year, I want to, first of all, bring any questions about this to Thursday's year, after you have a chance to think about it a little more. I want to talk a little more about the Asugim B'Melacha Shemayim point, that Rambam and the Ran compare it to Kohanim getting Truma. I don't know if anybody caught that. So I want to talk about that. And then I want to discuss distinctions between different types of taxes and who qualifies as Talmid Chacham for this principle. All right? Great. Shkoyach, everybody. Shkoyach, guys.